All right, guys, welcome to See You on the Trail. We're here on site at Tribe 16, one of the most, world-renowned off-road shops in Texas. It's located in Texas here at North Richland Hills. We're here sitting with a good friend of ours. He's been on the podcast before, except we did it out in the middle of nowhere.
With a, was that a raccoon or a possum?
That was a raccoon.
A raccoon. Right, yeah. Shelby crashed the party.
Yep. Shelby St. Clair. What? Oh, was it a possum? It was a possum. Okay.
I never saw it. I just went with what y'all said. Of course, I was about 9 beers deep, and night vision sucked back then.
Yeah, that's true. But it was a fun night. So if you guys haven't seen that, you can guys go back and check that out. It talks about Crandon, and we had Kevin Taylor on the podcast, Ian Boyce, Cody St. Clair, and Shelby St. Clair. And no, they're not related.
No, but we live 5 miles apart.
Okay. I'm surprised you're not.
You would think we are.
But let's go ahead and start out and talk about, let's start out from the beginning, Shelby. Where did you come from? And let's go ahead and lead it up from when you were a kid and what got you into off-road, man.
Well, about 46 years, 9 months ago, my mom and my daddy got together one night and a little boom, boom, shakalaka. Okay. 9 months later, here I come.
Wow, all right.
Do you want to go that far back?
You can. I don't care.
I don't really remember the first, I'm going to say 8, 9 years of my childhood. It's all a blur from extracurricular activities, I guess you could say.
Okay. All right. We'll leave it at that.
We'll start about there. So about 10 years old or so, I stole my mama's blazer, went out and found some ditches and some trails and had a little fun, then found a big old mud hole and got it stuck. And I was grounded for about 6 months after that. And that kind of started my driving career. And I was like, man, this off-road stuff's pretty cool. And I got to be about 16, bought me a YJ. Jeep YJ, biggest hunk of crap I ever owned.
That's my favorite hunk of crap. My YJ that I had, I loved it.
It was a great off-road toy, but for a daily driver.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I think I can attribute most of my back issues to driving a YJ daily for about 2 years. And finally gave up on that and went to a little sports car. And I was like, yeah, I'm not made for that YJ. So I sold it, pawned it off, sold it, and got the little sports car and had fun with that. And I was not really doing anything off-road related until probably 30 years old.
Wow. Okay.
It was probably, 30, I'm going to say. Started toying with a little bit of off-road stuff.
What parks? You're from Texas. You're born and raised here in Texas?
No, born and raised in Louisiana.
Louisiana. And yep. So, like, what did you guys just find dirt roads to go on or?
We found old hunting trails, hunting leases.
Logging trails, I'm assuming.
Logging trails. I mean, anything we could find that was a dirt road that was just, a place to get off the highway.
Gotcha.
We didn't have any off-road parks in that part of Louisiana, and I knew nothing about hot springs at the time. Of course, this was way back before the days of internet, right?
Right. So, this was early 90s, probably, right?
Yeah, mid-90s. Mid-90s. Yeah, early mid-90s, somewhere in there.
Because I think we're about the same age, so I think I was born in 78. So
you're 2 years younger than me.
Okay. Yeah, we got right around the same amount. Yeah. I got you. Go ahead.
So we found hunting leases and logging roads and things of that nature. And it was no challenge, right, per se, as to what we race on or what I have raced on in the past. It was just going down a dirt road, drinking a cold beverage and, having fun with your friends. That's all it was about. And then several years, we're going to fast forward until I was in my mid-30s, I'm going to say. So 10, 12 years ago, my wife wanted a Jeep. And I was like, oh, Lord, here we go. Because I knew what this rabbit hole looked like. I've been down this path before. And we bought our Jeep Rubicon, and she's like, yeah, let's go off-road. And so some friends of ours are like, hey, we're going to go to Hot Springs. We're like, all right, cool, let's go. And this thing was on stock, stock 32-inch tires, just bone stock 10th anniversary Jeep Rubicon. And I was like, all right, cool, you're going to drive. I'm going to sit over here and drink beer. And she's like, no, I'm not driving, homie. You driving. All right, cool. So I just started driving, and I took her on all the little ones and two trails, little bunny trails, I'm going to call them. And she was hooked at that point. And she's like, oh, we got to make this Jeep more capable. I'm like, oh, God.
Here comes the pocketbook.
Here comes the pocketbook. Exactly. So I got online, started doing some research about what lift kits are good for Jeeps and blah, blah, blah. And I ended up on Metal Cloak. And we bought a, I think it was a 3-inch lift kit for her Jeep. Maybe it's a 4-inch. I don't remember. Bought the flat fenders, did the 35s, the bead locks, you know, probably 15 grand worth of stuff all, you know, all combined. Put it on there. And she's like, all right, cool. Let's go back to Hot Springs. And we go to Hot Springs. We went and ran Rubicon Ridge first. I think it's called Rubicon Ridge. It's Rubicon something. And there's a little kicker trail right off to the left, right at the start of Rubicon, called Bailey's Boulders. She's like, we got to do that.
This is awesome.
I'm like,
you don't find too many women like this. Come on now.
No. And she was just sitting in the passenger seat with her little boot on her foot because it never fails. She's always, you know, hurt her foot one way or another. And I looked at it and I was like, man, that's a 4. Screw it. Let's go. Wait, can we cuss?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
You can.
Well, let me dial that back just a little bit. I was like, yeah, fuck it. Let's go. And we circled back around. We got on Bailey's Boulder. I put a tire on it. And I was like, this is doable. And we're on 35. So I was like, yeah, well, I think we can do it. And I back up, take another stab at it. Bam, crash the front bumper into the rock. You could hear the tears coming out of her eyeball because I scratched her $50,000, $60,000 Jeep Rubicon. And I was like, oh, don't worry. We'll fix it. We'll fix it. I never even got out to look at it, but I was like, I know this is bad. This is going to be bad. This is going to be expensive. But hey, it is what it is. At least I didn't roll it. Nobody got hurt, whatever. And somebody's virus jumped out. They decided to spot us up because they didn't think I could do it. And I was like, well, we're going to see. And I had a buddy spot me up. Made it flawless, and she was like, I'm hooked. This is what we're doing. So we did that for, I'm going to say, 2 or 3 years doing rock crawling, and then I decided, let's build a trail car. Tube chassis, 2-seat. Actually, take that back. I wanted a tube chassis, 4-seat crawler on Rockwells and 54s.
Okay, you were going dreaming big. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it was go balls deep, right? So. Yeah. Started talking to several builders in the area. I say several builders in the area. There was only 2. I'm not going to name their names, but, ended up contracting with one guy. Excuse me. I hope we can edit that out.
You're good.
Okay. Ended up, you know, giving one guy a deposit and bought a bunch of parts, and I ended up meeting him at, in Carthage over at Jonas Burnett's place. I'm sure you've heard of Jonas Burnett.
If you haven't heard of Jonas Burnett, then you haven't lived.
Yeah, you don't know anything off-road if you don't know who Jonas Burnett is. Dude is just master fabricator.
Oh, he builds some of the coolest stuff, and it's classy.
His old 50s Chevy, he's got this 12-valve swapped. I keep trying to buy it, but he won't sell it.
Well, his tow vehicle alone, it's a one-ton dually, I believe,
yep.
Chevy. And it's just slick looking. It's blue and white. I think blue over white. Man, I love that thing. I'm like, well, you want to sell it? Nope. He ain't selling nothing.
He doesn't sell anything. And, you know, I was like, hey, that's cool. But I keep trying to buy it, even though I know the answer is going to be no. But that's just the way I am. I'm very stubborn and I don't take no for an answer. So I just keep prying on him. But.
Yeah. I mean, you miss all the shots you don't take. Is that what they say?
Pretty much. Yeah. it's about how it goes.
Okay. So you called Jonas.
Well, no. Didn't call Jonas. I'd contracted with this guy to build me a chassis, and I was on the hunt to find some parts. I was still living in North Louisiana at the time, but I found all of the parts over in Dallas. And the guy was like, yeah, I'm actually going to Carthage next weekend. I'm like, oh, wait, we got a buddy that lives over there. His name's Jonas. He's like, oh, I know Jonas. So this guy loaded up Rockwell axles. I want to say I got the transfer case from him. And something else, but he just loaded up a pile of parts on a trailer and brought it over to Jonas's place. And me and my buddy went over there and met him. And we had my seats, we had my engine, my transmission, because I had all that with me. And we just went down to Jonas's and pop a top.
That's right. Again.
And we ended up putting everything on one trailer. And I remember we took a picture, and I tried to find it today, but I think it's on my old account that I got locked out of. it was literally, it looked like the buggy without a chassis. Right. I mean, it was everything for it except the tube work. It was kind of wicked looking. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. So my buddy took it back to his place. He started building it, got the mainframe rails done, got the A pillar, B pillar, C pillar done. Again, it was a huge 4-seater on Rockwells is what it was going to be. And come springtime, I don't remember the year, 15, maybe 16, somewhere in there, we had massive flooding in Shreveport-Bossier.
Right. Okay, I remember that.
Massive flood. I don't remember exactly what year it was, but I know he does because he recently posted about it. Everything got swamped. Everything. Motor, transmission, transfer case, axles. Was it repairable? Yes. But the guy felt so bad, he ended up just giving me all my money back. I took what parts I could and salvaged those and started looking for another chassis builder. And I couldn't find a chassis builder that I was comfortable with building a four-seater, so I told the wife, I said, screw it, let's build a two-seater. And that's where it all went wrong.
How so? How did it go wrong that way? It should go better, right?
Well, yeah, but when you build a two-seater and then you get these aspirations of, man, I want to go race this thing. And that's where I just totally left turned and went into so much debt. It's not even funny. I ended up getting a chassis built from George Lynn at Angry Fab Rock Bouncers out of Arab Alabama, excuse me. And he took about 9 to 12 months somewhere in there to build it. Whole different drivetrain. I ended up trading him the axles towards some of the work, the Rockwells. I ended up putting a 14 bolt in the back, Dana 60 in the front, because again, it was trail car, right?
Right.
I
mean,
we're building a trail car, so I don't need a whole lot of horsepower. I don't need heavy duty axles. And went and picked up the car same weekend as, I can't remember if it was Race to Riches or a Southern Rock Racing race at Wind Rock Park over in Eastern Tennessee.
Okay. I know what you're talking about.
And went and picked up the chassis or the roller, excuse me. Went up there, hung out the weekend, then took the 14-15 hour drive home back to Texas at this point, because a lot had happened from the time I started building this chassis to the time I got it picked up. And when I say this chassis, I mean the four seater. I ended up retiring from my job when I was in North Louisiana. I worked for an international company that was, my office was Dallas. They transferred me to New Orleans, and I did not like the culture and the fit in New Orleans. It was not a fit for me. So I said, screw it, and I retired. I was happy. I didn't have to go to work. I could fish every day. I could do whatever I wanted, right?
Right.
Yeah, just don't answer your phone call when somebody says, hey, you want to come to work? So I got a phone call. It was probably 3 weeks after I had quit, retired, whatever, and it was my old boss in North Carolina I hadn't talked to in like 10 years. He's like, hey, what are you doing? I said, nothing. Why? He said, I'm going to pay you this much money to move to North Carolina. I said, like hell you are. And he said, okay. And he hung up the phone. I thought there was nothing of it. A week goes by, maybe. I get another phone call. I was like, hey, what are you doing? I said, same thing I was doing last time. Nothing. He said, I'm going to pay you this much money to come to North Carolina. I said, well, now we got to talk. I mean, it was a considerable difference between the first offer and the second offer. And I told the wife, I said, hey, I've got a job offer up in North Carolina. She's like, let's go. Shit. I did not want to go back to work.
She agrees to almost everything you get yourself into. Do you realize this?
She's not smart.
Oh, okay.
So I've learned if you marry dumb, they will agree to just about anything. I don't know what the hell that was. That sounded like a gunshot.
Yeah, well, we are in North Richland Hills.
It's DFW, so yeah. I ain't bleeding, I don't think, so I think we're good here. So the next thing I know, you know, we're moving to North Carolina, and I take a service manager position for a security company, and I was miserable the entire time I was there. 2 weeks in, I was like, this is not right. I don't need to be here. And I hung out for about 6 months, and I was like, screw it, honey. I can't deal with the stress. I mean, I was 40 at the time, maybe 39, 40. I was like, I'm going bald. I'm going gray. I can't do this. So I drove up at a meeting that morning, the morning that I quit. I had a meeting at like 8 o'clock with a customer downtown. Our office was right, I don't know, 3 miles away. I called her on the way from the office to the, or from the customer meeting to the office, and I said, hey, I'm about to quit my job. I need you to come pick me up. She's like, what do you mean? I said, I'm giving my 2-day notice. I quit today.
Today.
Yep. So I walked in the building, dropped my keys, dropped my phone, dropped my laptop. I was like, deuces, I'm out. I cannot deal with this anymore. And I left that day. And I told the wife, I said, hey, let's just stay in North Carolina. I love it up here. My brother's up here. We got some family, some friends. Let's just stay. A week later, I get a call from Dallas. The company I used to work for that transferred me to New Orleans is like, hey, are you working? I'm like, nope. He's like, cool, we're going to pay you this much money to come to Dallas. I said, that ain't enough. And I hung up the phone. And then they called me back 10 minutes later. He's like, all right, final offer. Shit. All right, honey, we're moving to Dallas. I think she had just finished unpacking everything from the move from Shreveport to North Carolina. And then here we are packing everything back up and moving to Dallas. So I ended up flying down to Dallas, starting my job. And then she took a week or so to pack everything up. Then I flew back up there, rented a U-Haul truck and drove it all back all the way down to Dallas. And that's when I moved to Dallas. I think it was 2017. I've been here 6-7 years now. And that's kind of where we go back to going to pick up the chassis, as we had lived in Dallas at that point. So I went and picked it up, brought it to my garage. I'm not gonna call it a shop because I was renting a house. And Dana Hale, you know, a lot of people know Dana Hale. He's kind of part of Team Rufus. He came to the house, just checked things out. He's like, hey, you know, I really could use that 4-speed Atlas. I said, yeah, I bet you could, pal. And next thing I know, he buys it. I'm like, well, shit. Okay, what are we going to do? I said, well, let me see if an SCS will fit. So I did all the measuring in the world. I'm stressing. I'm like, I think it'll make it. I think we can make it fit. So we loaded the thing up, took it to Dana's house out to Weatherford, and get the SCS, bring it out to his shop, go to shove it in the chassis, and it doesn't fit in between the frame rails. Oh. I'm like, God damn it. So I start talking to like Danny Smith and Heath Day. And, you know, Heath is another one of those people that's been around the industry for a long time, been around the sport. Everybody knows him. Everybody loves him. He's like, I'll come cut it for you. I'll come make it fit. I was like, okay, well, whatever. The next thing I know, like 3 days later, Heath shows up with his wife. Okay, I guess we're doing this. Let's do it. So we ride out to the shop next morning, and he fires up the acetylene torch, and I just walked away. I could not watch him cutting my brand new chassis up that's never been driven.
And you really didn't know Heath at the time, but
I had never met Heath Day face to face, and the dude was staying in my house and then cutting on my chassis the next day. And I'm like, no, I checked out. I walked out the shop. I was like, there's no way. I can't watch this. And I come back 30, 45 minutes later. He's got the SCS cut in and all Frenched in and fixed the tube where he had to, you know, bend it out and did some goofy stuff. And I was like, dude, that looks great. Now what am I going to do? Well, hell, I get me a transfer case that's good for racing. Huh. Technically, this is a rock bouncer now. So I finished wiring it, finished plumbing it, got it running, and said, hey, we're going to do a little bit of shock tuning and go race this thing here in a few weeks. Work got in the way, life got in the way, whatever. Didn't end up making the race. And started talking to Dana again. And talking to Dana is a horrible idea. I do not recommend it because he will spend your money.
That's probably his job, isn't it?
It is, yeah, pretty much. He's like, hey, you know, before you race this thing, you really ought to think about putting some bypasses on it. And, well, if you're doing that, might as well go ahead and put Data 80s under it, front and rear. And, hell, let's just go ahead and do trailing arms.
And that sounded right.
I mean, it sounded great in theory. And I started adding up rough numbers in my head. And I'm like, okay, I'm about to spend 20 grand on axles. Because these were Dana 80s, 2-inch, 47 spline, F250, 350 outers, et cetera. And I was like, man, this is, you know, fabricated knuckles. I was like, this is going to work. And I was like, okay, bypasses and shocks. Again, this was 5-6 years ago. So it was like $6,000 maybe for those. So I was like, all right, $26,000, not too bad. I think we can do this. I don't know about the trailing arms, though. I think the whole back of the chassis is going to get cut off. And I was like, yeah, we're not going to do it. And then I started talking to Heath. He's like, oh, yeah, it wouldn't be much. Just cut the back off and kind of start over. I'm like, yeah, well, whatever. Cool. When do you want to do it? He's like, yeah, I don't. I said, well, you said it wouldn't be that hard. So when do you want to do it? And he's like, yeah, I really don't want to do it. I said, well, you're doing it. And I just kind of left it at that for about 2 to 3 weeks because I had other stuff going on. And I knew he had just finished a project up in his shop. And I'm going to call his shop. Because it's not really a shop. It's like a shed that he makeshifts into a shop that the guy does phenomenal work out of.
It's just amazing.
Yeah. And I called him up one Saturday morning. I was like, hey, what are you doing? And Heath lives 4 hours from me. And it
he's
was probably
Texarkana, isn't he?
Yeah, Texarkana. Yeah. He's up by Kevin Taylor. And he called, or I called him about 10 o'clock that morning. I was like, hey, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'll just piddling here around the house. I was like, cool. Are y'all home? He's like, yeah. I said, cool. I think we're going to slide by for a little bit. He had no clue I had the chassis on the trailer. I had actually the whole car on the trailer. And I pulled in the driveway, and he come out, and he just started shaking his head. If you've ever seen Heath shake his head, it's just like,
yeah,
you know, it's like he's disappointed in you, right?
Right.
And I get out the truck. He's like, what are you doing with that thing? I said, oh, you told me to drop it off. He said, no, the hell I didn't. I said, well, I misunderstood you, I guess. So it's yours now. And we got it, you know, fired it up, backed it off the trailer, and I had no shocks on it because I'd already sold the shocks. And I just had metal bars, you know, like struts almost, just hard stops just to kind of keep the chassis up off the bumps.
Right.
And I backed it off the trailer, no ramps. Bam, cracked my nugget wide open. I'm like, oh, yeah, I probably should have put on the harness for that one. And I have ever since then. I was like, damn, that hurt.
It's the one thing we always talk about is safety and just pulling it off a trailer. You don't think shit's going to happen. And the one time you don't do it is the day it's going to happen.
Yep, and it happened. I mean, it wasn't bad. It was didn't even need a stitch, but I was bleeding, you know, a decent amount. Right. And I was like, oh, crap. So we get it off the trailer, get it backed into a shop. I was like, all right, cool. I've got these axles, so we need to go ahead and pull these axles off real quick.
Okay.
He's like, all right. So he gets his little chain fall set up, and we start gripping axles out. And I said, yeah, the new axles will be delivered to a race that you're going to in about 2 weeks, so I need you to pick those up for me. I pretty much put everything off on Heath, and I really feel bad for it, but Heath will do anything for anybody, and I'll do the same for him just because of how much he's helped me. But that's kind of where the Rock Bouncer came to life, was at Heath's. And it was a weekend before race. You know, he probably 6 months working on it because he's not dedicated as far as he can get in the shop and work something for 3 weeks. Right. He'll work on it for 2 hours, won't touch it for 2 weeks, et cetera. And he called me and said, hey, I think we're close. Why don't you go ahead and come on up? We'll get the plumbing redone. We'll get the brakes and the electrical. We'll get everything redone, get it ready to go. And we'll start doing a little bit of shock tuning here at the house. It's like, hey, cool. So I load up and I get up there and I was like, oh, we need this brake fitting. And again, Heath is 4 hours away. I needed a brake fitting that was not available in Texarkana, Texas. Dana Hale left his house in Weatherford, drove to Arlington, got me two brake fittings, and met me in Rockwall, Texas. And I ended up hauling ass back to Heath's. And by the time I get back, it was 12:01. So I was like, I'm just going to go to the hotel and I'll see y'all in the morning. So I loaded up next morning, went out to Heath's. We got the brakes bled. Car was running. I was like, cool, let's go shock tune it. And we go blasting, you know, he's got a little bar ditch out in front of his house. We were jumping the road and I started smelling something. I'm like, man, what the hell is that? Transmission leak, major transmission, like one of the plugs fell out or something. I was like, oh, that's odd.
That's no bueno because that's flammable.
Yeah, yeah. Luckily, my exhaust headers just like dumped straight out so it didn't go into the belly pan. But Heath saw what it was. He's like, oh, yeah, that's this. And he went and popped it back in. And I was like, cool, let's fill it back up. So we filled it back up, started running through some creek beds out by his house, and we parked it on the trailer or parked it back in the shop. I was like, all right, cool. I'll be back Thursday to pick up the car because I didn't have a trailer with me at that time. I think I was even in my work truck, like company vehicle. And he goes to load it up on the trailer Thursday, because he knew I was coming. He's like, yeah, no, he was taking it. I'm sorry. He was driving it for me to Hawk Pride. He was taking it out there for me because I had my side-by-side. And he went to go load it up on the trailer. He said, well, let me run it down the road, make sure everything's good. Then I'll bring it back, load it on the trailer, strap it down. He went to go run it down the road, and he started hearing a knocking noise. We're like, oh, Lord. And again, this motor is 3 years old at this point. And he brought a buddy over. I can't remember who it was, but he brought a buddy over. They're like, oh, it's an oil pan or a oil pump. They swapped the oil pump out. They're like, oh, yeah, we're good. We're good. We're good. And then they go start it up, and it's again. And we're like, oh, crap, we're done. Yeah, I'm not going to make this race. This is my first Rock Bouncer race in my car, whatever. I was like, screw it, park it. I'll come get it. I'll put a new motor in it or something. And I made a post on Facebook. One of my buddies said, hey, if you can get a motor, I'll swap it out and I'll get it there for you. Oh, shit. All right. Crap, I don't have a motor. Well, Heath's buddy or neighbor actually happened to have a whole truck that was just sitting behind his barn. It was 2000 Chevy with a 6.0. He's like, you can have the whole truck, you know, just for the motor, but just give me the truck back. How much you want? Nothing. Okay.
Yeah, I would do it too.
Yeah. So Heath loaded up the race car, took it down to Sean Cross's shop in Gilmer, Texas. That's funny. Went back to Texarkana, loaded up the truck, took it back down there. My buddy was already at Sean's pulling the old motor out. So by the time he got down there, they were able to pull the motor out of the truck, put it in the race car, and had it fired up by like midnight that night. And I get a text. He's like, we have power. I was like, cool. Do we have any knocks? Because that's all I was worried about was an engine knock, right? I mean, it's right. Like, I didn't know the status of this motor. Did the truck have 100,000 miles or have 300,000 miles? I didn't care. If it wasn't knocking, cool, we're going to race. We're just not going to have any power. So we load up. We go all the way out to Hawk Pride and pull it off the trailer. I make a little hot lap because I'd never really driven the car. Make a little hot lap, come back, and Steve Howell shows up, and he says, hey, I want to take it for a spin since I'm going to drive it tomorrow. I said, that's fine. And 5 minutes later, I don't hear it. I'm like, oh, Lord. Then my phone rings. Hey, your motor's knocking. I'm sorry, what? Yeah, the engine started knocking when I got down to the pipeline. Shit. So we went down there, towed it all the way back to camp, and something, we finally figured it out, but something with the intake was creating a vacuum on the crankcase, which was sucking all the oil out of the top end of the motor.
Huh. Okay. Yeah,
weirdest thing ever.
And that's what ruined two motors?
That's what ruined two motors, yeah. It was something with the Trailblazer SS intake that smoked two motors, essentially ate up the cam bearings on both of them.
Wow. Okay. Maybe some of our gurus can actually comment on it and tell us exactly what the problem was. Why did it do that?
Yeah, we have no clue. I don't know where that intake is now, but I ended up when I got the new motor built by Thompson Motorsport. They're like, "Do you have an intake?" I was like, "Nope, I ain't got nothing, dog." It's like, "What do you mean?" I said, "I have smoked two motors in a week. I don't want nothing to do with that motor or the other motor to come onto this new engine." They're like, "Cool, we got you." They sold me everything. You know, oil pan, it was complete, ready to rock and roll. All I had to do was buy injectors.
Nice.
Well, and you know, and the wiring. So,
right.
No big deal. Cool. We'll get it swapped out. And anyway, I wasn't able to race that weekend at Hawk Pride, and I was bummed. I was depressed. I was like, screw it, sell everything. I'm done. Because when I get pissed off, I'm ready to just quit it all, right? Just, right. I'm done. I don't want to see it again. Burn the bitch to the ground. I don't care. And, the wife was like, no, calm down. And about that time, Sean Cross comes walking up. He's like, hey, I've got Aaron over here. I'm like, all right, cool. And Aaron's the guy that built Cockroach or had Cockroach built.
Yeah, I know Aaron well. We did some stuff at Texas Motor Speedway up the road here.
Yeah, yeah. And Aaron is super, super nice guy, but he's tiny, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
You know, like 5'5", 110 pound. Well, he's probably about 160 because he's built, but I mean, just a small dude. Then you have me that's 5'10", 5'11". I was probably 250 at the time. And you have Sean Cross at 6'3".
Right.
And Aaron's like, I'm putting both of y'all in the car this weekend. I'm like, bro, I don't even know if I'll fit in that damn thing. And I'm sitting in the race car and the steering wheel's right here.
Well, the funny thing is that, and you're talking about Cockroach?
Yeah, Cockroach. Okay.
I've got pictures, and he got stuck on one of the big obstacles down at Texas Motor Speedway.
I remember that, yeah.
And I was standing up there talking to him, and the person that he was giving rides to, she all of a sudden just says, hey, something's on fire over here. So we go to scrambling, and it turns out it was the power steering dripping on the headers that were wrapped. Yeah. And it was just smoking, and we're like, but to see him, he was just sitting there in the seat, and he looked like Cockroach was humongous because he looks so small.
Oh yeah, Cockroach is a huge car,
but it's set up outside. But it's set up specifically for him.
It's set up for him. I mean, he's the size of Timmy Cameron, except a little more buff, right? Right. And Timmy's a small dude, and so is Aaron. But I was like, cool, we're gonna get in this thing. I shoehorned my fat ass into that car. I couldn't move. And he's like, oh, yeah, it's got rear steer. You're going to need. I said, dude, I ain't got time to learn your rear steer. I don't need this mojo bullshit, right? He's like, no, you push it this way. The tires turn this way. I'm like, cool, I got it. Bro, I didn't listen to a word he said. And I get up to the first turn, and I'm sawing on the front steering wheel, or the steering wheel for the front tires, and I'm like, this thing ain't turning right. I need rear steer. So in my head, I'm turning right. I need to push the button to the right, right? No, no. So that thing started crab walking on me. I'm like, this ain't right. So I let go of the button. I'm like, screw it. I backed up, made a 73-point turn in the middle of a rock bouncer race.
Did it have auto centering?
Yeah, it had auto center, thankfully. So I didn't have to like unstrap and look back and see which way I needed to go. But, you know, it finally got straight. I made a 73-point turn, finished the hill slow as shit, but I finished my first bouncer hill ever. I was like, man, I'm pumped. And then second hill, I did a lot better because there was only like one turn. It wasn't super sharp, you know, so I could have made the turn. Because the wheelbase on that thing was like 136 inches.
Oh, it's stupid big.
And it was 114 inches outside of tire, I think. It was stupid wide. But that was my first time in a car, and I was excited because I paid all that money to go race, and I was actually able to race after losing two engines in a week.
Right.
And, you know, I did the whole rock bouncing thing for about a year as a driver, went out to King of the Hammers the following year. I had tore the car down for paint, and I get a call that says, hey, we're going to King of the Hammers. I'm paying for your entry and paying your trip. I'm like, cool. Shit.
What team?
Just my bouncer.
Oh, just your bouncer. I gotcha.
No team. It was just, we're going to run the shootout. And I was like, man, that's awesome. It's Christmas Eve. I got the phone call. So let's put that in your time frame, right?
Yeah, because that gives you a month.
A month. Yeah. I had just torn the car down and dropped it off for powder coat that day.
Well, I was like, welcome to the King of the Hammer shuffle.
Yeah.
It's nothing. It's the way it works every single time.
Yep.
And it don't matter what team you are. You can call it a James Cantrell if you want to.
It's Cantrelling at the finest. Yes.
I mean, but it was the same when I was traveling with Derek West. It was the same when I was traveling with anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
They were wrenching on the car till the night of to get it ready. And then once they got it out there to the lake bed, they were still wrenching on it.
Yeah.
Because everything changes once you get out there because all of us Midwest boys aren't used to going out there and wheeling. So different things go wrong.
Yeah, it's so dry, first off, right? Yeah. I mean, there's no mud. You're like, what the hell is dry? But, I mean, a month for me to do it by myself. I had a little bit of help. I had Dana Hill come over and help me a little bit. I think he helped me put the transmission, transfer case, and motor back in, maybe stab the axles. But I had to replumb the whole car. I had to rewire the whole car. And I'm very meticulous on my wiring, so it took me forever. Anyway, I got the car done about 2 days before Justin ended up flying in for us to get in the truck and head out there. I was like, I can't believe I made it. But we didn't have to work on the car the entire time we were at Hammers, which was awesome.
That's amazing. That's a fluke.
I never drove it and once we got to Hammers until the night of the shootout. I took it out like a quarter mile to take some pictures because nobody had seen the powder coat or the color scheme or anything like that. So I took it out there, took some pictures, said, you're getting parked, you're getting tarped. And not going to drive you until the night of the shootout.
Smart move.
And the shootout was an epic failure. We're not even going to talk about that. But I needed a GPS for the shootout course that night.
It was like a 500-yard shot, isn't it?
No, this is the first time they raced it over at Idle Issues.
Okay. So it was a little bit longer.
It was a lot longer than just running the back door, right?
Back door, yeah.
They had moved it over next to Chocolate Thunder, and they ran that side over there. And I took a weird bounce, and I had a co-driver. It was weird, but I took a little weird little bounce. I'm like, I don't know where the hell I'm at.
Got vertigo?
No, I didn't. I hadn't been drinking either, and I hadn't smoked any weed, so I don't know what the hell happened. But I kind of got turned around, and I was like, man, if I back up, I'm okay. And I put it in reverse and started backing up, and I felt it just start to roll. And I'm like, we're going to wait right here until somebody tells me what the hell to do. And that was pretty much the end of my rock bouncer shootout experience. I was like, that's fun. I'll probably never do it again just because the cost and time to get out there for
it's ridiculous. It's, you know, stupid.
One event, right?
Right.
And I was like, okay, well, that was fun. And then we stuck around for all the races, 4900, EMC, 4400, all that, and just had an absolute blast. I was like, man, I'm coming back to Hammers every year. Even if I don't race, I will fly out here, crash in somebody's camper, eat their damn food, drink their beer, and just have fun. And that's kind of where the Ultra 4 King of the Hammer bug bit me was back in 2019.
Yeah. That was one of the years I didn't make it. I started going in 2011.
Okay.
I did 11, 12, 13, 14. 12, 13, and 14, I was an announcer. And then I quit going 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. And I showed up in 2020 and 2021. And I've missed it since then. It's just, it's too damn expensive.
I
have to have, to make it worth my while to do videos for people. And I don't charge an ass load. I don't charge a lot of money. I have to have a good, at least four solid guys that I can do video for to make it worth my while to take off work for 10 days. I mean, this is becoming a 10 to 15.
It's more of 15 days now.
Yeah, I mean, it's more of a 2 week event now. And so that's why. But hey, while we're kind of in a break here, I want to talk about our current sponsor. This is our first and current sponsor. It's a Territory Whiskey. It's a pecan cinnamon whiskey. It's bottled in Hollywood, Florida, but ideally, it is a liqueur. It's not a whiskey. It's more of a liqueur, so it's sweet.
Smells good. Smells pecan-y.
Yeah, it does. It's actually very good. There you go, Michelle. Michelle's watching our cameras for us.
I wouldn't say she's watching the camera. She's been watching her phone. For the last 45 minutes. She looked up the camera once.
She's probably looking at porn. I don't know.
Pornhub.com.
ASMR.
Don't forget to subscribe to my OnlyFans.
Yeah, no shit. Hey, you know what? I'm thinking about building one for See You on the Trail.
Oh, shit, yes. I'm in. Give me a free subscription because I don't pay for that shit.
I don't know why people do, but amazingly enough, they catch you on the subscription and then you forget that you subscribe to them and they continue to charge you for them.
Yep.
That's the catch. But...
all you need is feet.
Yeah, exactly. No, but let's get back to our sponsor. Sorry, Jamie. Jamie Howard's the owner. Jamie Howard's the owner of it. He actually ideally lives about 20 minutes from my hometown in Purcell, Oklahoma. And we actually met him at a local tasting. And then I got in touch with him and he's like, hell yeah, come on board with us. So this is it. Cheers to you.
Cheers.
Cheers to Territory.
Thanks, Territory Whiskey.
What's your thoughts?
Wow. It's, remember the bite you get from your first shot of like Fireball?
Yes.
That's exactly what it reminded me of.
It is.
It's better.
It's smoother than Fireball. Yes.
It's smoother than Fireball. You can see it's a little thicker.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously because it's a liqueur, but damn, that's some good shit.
Yeah.
No, I'm taking a bottle home.
By the way, this is your bottle. Compliments to Jamie Howard.
It might make it to the house. We'll see how that goes. Thank you, Jamie Howard.
Yeah, Jamie. Jamie's the owner of Territory. Go check him out, territorywhiskey.com. And you can look him up on Facebook and Instagram. We're working on him with a TikTok. We're trying to get him to start TikTok.
Ooh, nice.
And so we'll see how that goes. She's missed TikTok, so we just let her do that. Anyway, now we're talking back to the Ultra 4. You actually got the Ultra 4 bug back in 19, you said, right?
Yeah, I think it was it was either 19 or 20. It all is just a freaking blur. Ever since COVID, I have lost all track of time. I couldn't tell you how old I am, usually what day of the week it is. So let's not even go there. But it's like I said, it was either 19 or 20. And Kevin Taylor, who was co-owner of the Rock Bouncer series that I started helping.
Right.
He went and did his first endurance race, and that's kind of where the bug bit him because that was Heath's passion. Heath, you know, did a lot of co-driving for Ross Pilgreen.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah, so Heath, I think, has finished King of the Hammers a couple of times in side-by-side, but never finished the big dance in 4400. So when they started building Kevin a new bouncer, Heath looked at it about halfway through and said, hey, this can be an Ultra 4 car. So they made a few changes, you know, to meet safety tech with the firewalls and you know, the plates behind the seats and all that, just to make sure they could meet tech. And they built this Ultra 4 Porsche themed rock mouncer. And Kevin went and did his first race. I think he finished his first ever race. I don't know if it was Ultra 4 or if it was another series, but he finished and he was like, dude, this is awesome. I just got more seat time in this one race than I did in like 5 years of rock bouncing.
Yeah, you talk about seat time. The funny thing is that back in the day before, well, it was before King of the Hammers even really kind of started. It was XRRA.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically rock bouncing, but a little bit faster and
yep.
not as hard. And the funny thing was that the guys go, well, we only ran for like a minute and a half, 3 minutes for all this. So then then King of the Hammers popped up. And so everybody went to King of the Hammers. They're like, yeah, this is awesome. Long 10, 12 hours.
Yeah.
And then, Dirt Riot popped up.
I remember that. Yeah.
And Dirt Riot's first race was 4 hours long.
Wow.
And this was at Copper Mines Off-Road Park.
Where is Copper Mines?
Altus, Oklahoma.
Okay. I thought that was in Oklahoma.
My good buddy Raymond Moody owns it. They had to shut it down because they built a pool. And if they charged to get into the park, they had to put a fence around the pool. And he's like, this is my house. I'm not doing that. Screw that. So he said, park's closed.
Yep.
And so that's why we never had it. But Dirt Riot's first race was there in Copper Mines. And it was 4 hours long. And that was the only Dirt Riot race that was 4 hours long because all the racers said it was too long.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, it was only a 4.5 mile lap and they had to do it a ton of times.
Wow. Yeah, that would get old quick.
Exactly. So that's why they dropped it down to 2 hour races for the most part.
And 2 hours is very reasonable.
And they did it Grand Prix style, so which is what Ultra 4 is stepping into now. They're stepping into Grand Prix style racing.
Right.
So first place runs around at 1 hour and 30 minutes, cut it. Everybody else gets a checkered.
And I think the new format that JT and Jason Robinette and Liam have put together for that is awesome. Because, they used to be an hour, last year even, they were only running an hour. And then at Nationals, I think it was, is when they said, we're 1.5 hours plus one lap. And, of course, I didn't make it 1.5 hours. That's a whole other story. I made it 1.5 laps. So
it's coming up.
Yeah, it was, to me, it was successful because in that 1.5 laps, I had more time in the seat than I did in all of my rock bouncing career.
Right.
And it was only an 8 mile course, I think, 8.5 miles. So I did probably 12-ish miles. But right. I had an absolute blast in my first ever Ultra 4
now,
race.
Now, what car are you racing now? Since you've got, there's an in-between here because you at, now, can we even say it that you used to be the off-road waffle guy?
Yeah, we can say that.
Okay, because he was the one that originated the off-road waffle.
Yep, Off-Road Warehouse.
That's what it was called?
That's what it still is called, yeah, Off-Road Warehouse.
And you ended up selling that, right?
I ended up selling it to Trey Moore. He's had it for, over 3 years now. It was before COVID when I sold it to him.
I think that's when I actually got to start talking to you about what was going on. And, the waffle, if you know what the waffle is, So let's just,
not the blue waffle.
Not the blue waffle.
She didn't even look up.
No, she hasn't ever Googled it. She's probably Googling it
right
now.
Don't Google blue waffle. Do not.
And then, but the off-road waffle, which was very, very popular. That's what she's doing. And she's going to go, picture a blue waffle. What are you talking about? Anyway, never mind.
Yeah. Do not click on images.
But you did the waffle for a while, and then you sold that, but then you all of a sudden, you stepped into a waffle.
Oh, yeah.
And you won.
Actually, two back-to-back. There was two waffles that were put together. One was done by Clayton. Oh, crap. I'm
trying to remember his name, too.
Outlaw Buggy,
yeah.
The
side engine one.
Yeah,
one
side engine, LS supercharged, fabricated housings. He had ended up building a new bouncer named Undertaker, and he decided to waffle off the Outlaw. In the middle of the waffle before it was full is when Wes King got hurt in that bad fire. And they said, hey, we're going to throw, I think it was $5,000 or $10,000 towards Wes. I'm like, let me get another spot. I think I already had one spot. I said, let me get another spot. So I went ahead and paid for another spot. And then I get an email from Ruby Hollingsworth. That's the last name.
Yeah, Clayton Hollingsworth. Right. Clayton Hollingsworth. You're right.
I get a PM for Ruby Hollingsworth. She's like, hey, what do you want your third spot to be? I'm like, I only paid for two spots. She's like, no, you accidentally overpaid the second time you paid. I was like, oh, okay. So I threw a number out there, and Anthony Yaunt immediately commented back and said, take spot 245. Okay. I don't care. I ain't going to win anyways. You know, it's going to help Wes, right? So anything we can do to help Wes, let's do it. And lo and behold, damn, spot 245 won the waffle. I was eating dinner. Didn't even know they were having the live drawing. I was eating dinner. I was eating a venison filet, most beautiful piece of meat you can ever, you know, eat. And my phone just starts blowing up. Facebook Messenger, text messages, calls.
I was one of them.
Yeah, you were one of them. And, you know, I'm sitting there eating dinner, watching TV, and my wife's like, what the hell is going on with your phone? I was like, I don't know. I ain't really worried about it, and I'm more worried about this piece of steak in front of my face right now. And it just, the phone wouldn't stop, and I ended up getting another call, and it was Trey Moore, and I was like, I better answer this. Something major has gone on. Let me find out what the hell it is. She's like, ah, that's fine. So I answer the phone, and all I hear before his phone cuts out is, you lucky son of a bitch. And the phone dropped. And I had him on speaker because my phone, or the speaker on my phone, was broke, so I couldn't hold it up to my head for like 2 years. So I had him on speakerphone. My wife's like, what the hell is he talking about? I was like, baby, you have as much information as I have right now. I literally have no idea. And I saw a glimpse of a Facebook message come through, and they were like, congrats. And I looked back at her. I said, I think I just won the outlaw buggy. She's like, no way. I said, yeah, I think so. And then Trey called me back a few minutes later. He apparently hit a dead spot because he drives for, I'm going to say a package delivery service. I don't want to say the name of it, but he drives on the road. So he's going from hub to hub to hub. And he called me back. He's like, bro, you're not going to believe this, but you just won the outlaw bouncer. I'm like, you got to be shitting me. I said, I don't even know if I'll fit in that damn thing. Because Clayton, again, I don't know what it is with me and other dudes that are like, a quarter of my size, but it seems like I'm always getting in their race cars. And I was like, dude, I don't know if I'll fit. And Trey's about my size, maybe a little smaller. I don't know, but he's like, I think I can fit. So you can fit. I was like, all right, whatever. I'll figure it out. If not, I'll change the seat out. And, it was a week or two before I was able to even think about going up there and getting it. Trey said, hey, I've got off this weekend. Why don't I run up to Clayton's and get it? It's only like 2 hours. So I was like, hey, do it. And Trey went up there and got it. He's like, all right, my big ass fit in it, so I know you'll fit in it. And then like another week went by, and then me and Dana loaded up and drove all the way to, Louisville, Kentucky is where Trey lives, is right outside of Louisville. We went up there, picked up the car, stayed for about 2 hours, turned around and drove straight back to Texas. Talk about dragging ass when we was rolling across the state line. But that's where I got this race car. And then a couple of weeks later, Anthony Yacht was waffling off a trailer. It's just a little 20-foot, 102 wide bumper pull, you know, car hauler. And I think it wanted like $50 a spot. I was like, yeah, give me spot 2. And then I was like, no, give me spot 2, 4, and 5.
245.
Right? He's like, all right, I got you. So I paid him $150 or whatever, and I'd be damned if he didn't draw my number. So I won a trailer. I didn't have a trailer at this time because I was in the middle of going from a, you know, 48-foot race trailer to a motorhome so I could pull the big bouncer because it was 96 inches wide. It wouldn't fit many enclosed. And I was like, cool, now I got a trailer. Holy crap. Guess what number hit? Number 2. All right.
That's awesome.
All right. I feel like Matthew McConaughey, right? All right. So we get the trailer, and I'm like, man, this is awesome. And my wife was like, you know, we got to rename that buggy. I'm like, yeah, I can't deal with the name Outlaw because we used to be part of a rock bouncer series named Outlaw, and we all kind of got kicked in the dick, if you will.
Yep.
And shunned like we were 3-day-old, expired lettuce, right? And we kind of, you know, got left on the dock. And I've always said karma's a bitch. So I renamed that buggy to Karma.
I remember that, yeah.
And people were like, oh, you can't rename that. I said, the hell I can. It's mine. I can do what the hell I want with it, right? So I renamed it Karma, and I think I raced it twice. And then I had knee replacement, and I was going to let another dude drive the buggy. He ended up buying another one. So I was like, screw it, sell the damn thing. So I sold the bouncer. And then I get a phone call that says, hey, I think about selling my Ultra 4 car.
Shit.
Okay. How much? No, I can't afford that. And then he said, what if I make you a better deal? I said, then I might be able to afford it. So he gave me a better deal, and I don't want to talk numbers about it, right? Mm-hmm. So he gave me a slightly better deal that was within my price range of cash I had laying around. And I was selling my boat because I was like, I ain't fishing no more. Screw that. So I was selling my boat, and I was just waiting on dude to pay me, like, we're meeting at the bank in 3 days or some shit. And I was like, all right, Dana, I'm buying the car from you. So he brought it over, and I gave him part of the money. And then a few weeks later, I paid him off whenever I got the boat deal done because it kind of went down. So news to say, I had a 4800 car that was built by Tribe.
Right here where we're sitting.
Here, Tribe 16. So that car was built, you know, right back here. It's backwards on me right now, but it's back here to my right. And Dana, again, is a smaller guy. He's like your size in the hip. He ain't got no birthing hips on him. No. And I was like, Dana, I ain't going to fit in that car. Shit. So I went out to Summit Racing and bought a big boy, double XL fat boy seat. And I was like, yep, it ain't going to fit in this car without some modifications. Okay. So I took it to my buddy Jesse Moore that lives 20 minutes away or so. And he's like, yeah, I think we can shoehorn this seat in there. So, crap, we need a bracket made. Hey, Tribe, I need two of those brackets you built for Dana's car. Okay. Went and picked them up, gave them to Jesse. Car was ready in like a week. I was like, yeah, let's do this. So I signed up for the race at Nationals.
The one in Disney.
Yeah.
The first race in Disney, yeah. And by the way, talking about Disney, you do know why they dropped it down to the Grand Prix style racing there at Disney originally?
Mm-mm.
It's because GRDA gave them a window to shut everything down.
Oh.
And it put them in a pickle of sorts. But it ended up being so much better for Ultra 4. Because now they can say, hey, we're going to run this race at 2, this race at 4, this race at 6.
Mm-hmm.
It's a timing issue. So that I forgot to talk about that before. But but anyway. So
it makes sense.
That's why Big Rich always did that with Dirt Riot.
Right.
Because he could tell when everything was going to happen for the most part. Give it 30, 45 minutes. He knew when he was going to start the next race.
That's smart. I mean, it really is versus the format that they were doing. It worked for many years, but if you can improve on something, improve on it, right? Do it.
And Ultra 4 is doing that continuously 100% of the time. I talk to Alan Johnson all the time about little bitty stuff. Like they started this whole thing with on Speed Sport TV and everything like that. And they're branching out. They're doing way more stuff right now, and it's awesome. Now, did you hear that? I'm going off on a side tangent. Did you hear that Ultra 4 or MAO or whatever you want to call it, Jason Robinette,
mm-hmm.
he bought Great American Short Course.
That was what, about a week or two ago?
Yeah.
I saw the message come across. I'm like, now, whoa.
I saw that. So they bought Ultra 4.
Mm-hmm.
They own Ultra 4 now. Which is Ultra 4 USA now.
Right.
They bought gas
mm-hmm.
from the same guy.
Yeah. All he has left is King of the Hammers.
What do you think?
For how long?
What do you think is next?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So originally when he was trying to buy Ultra 4, when Jason was trying to buy it, this came directly from Jason's mouth. And I think I even confirmed it with Dave at a later date. He's like, I wanted to buy Ultra 4, but he would only sell me Great American Short Course. I didn't want Great American Short Course. I wanted Ultra 4. And then damn less than a year later, he's buying Great American Short Course anyway. So I'm figuring maybe 2 years before he pulls the trigger and able to buy King of the Hammers.
Now, that is Dave's baby. And I respect Dave. I love him. He's a great dude. He flies off the handle sometimes, but he does have great hair.
Great hair, though. Yeah. Speaking of great hair, she got a haircut today.
Yeah. But, no, I was just on a tangent, on an offside tangent, just to try to talk about a little bit about that. It's nuts. And then you got Travis Pastrana doing stuff here.
It's what they're doing at Mid-America. I mean, it was already wild 2 years ago at Visions.
I think that was the one that was a week long.
Yeah.
Oh, that was
when they brought in Dennis Anderson.
Yes. He actually shot me in the back with a water gun at the pool.
That sounds about right. But
it was him and Trace Atkins.
Oh, shit.
And Jason Robinette were all sitting in the pool, and I walked in a shorts. I had shorts on. I wasn't ready. I wasn't planning on swimming.
Right.
And Dennis Anderson, Jason Robinette, Trace Atkins were all in the pool. And I was sitting there talking to, I think, Miles or somebody. I was talking to somebody, Alan Johnson or somebody. And all of a sudden, I get squirted in the back with a water gun, like a big water gun.
Oh, damn.
I turn around. I'm like, what in the hell? And Dennis Anderson said to me, he goes, you're in the pool area? You get in. So I went and did a cannonball right in front of him.
Oh, man. Yeah, but you know, when he brought in Dennis Anderson that first year, and Jason Robinette and I had talked about visions and kind of the idea about it.
The vision?
Yeah, I didn't want to say vision because it seemed corny, right? But when we first talked about this idea was a year or so before visions ever happened. And he kind of had the same idea I had, but he went from this to this. I mean, he just blew it up. When I heard Dennis Anderson coming, I'm like, holy shit. And then Travis Pastrana now, and then the new short course. I mean, what they're doing up there is unheard of. In Jay, Oklahoma. Where the hell is Jay, Oklahoma? You got to look it up on a map to find out where the hell it's at if you've never been.
Yeah, and that's the greatest thing. And I remember when we were 2012, 2013, we were itching to go to King of the Hammers. That's where all the races are on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Now, guess where Ultra 4 is based out of?
Jay, Oklahoma.
Yep. 3 hours from my house.
And there's not a close race to us except Disney and Visions. So hopefully they get the schedule straight next year. I'm really hoping and pushing that they're going to have a central series next year. Because people like me, people like Chip, people like Kevin, people like Tim Hooper.
There's a lot of Midwest guys.
Yes. Yeah. Levi, he's up in Kansas, right?
It's Dodge City, Kansas.
Yeah, Dodge City. There's a good half or good dozen or more racers right here.
Oh, dude. Central Series Dirt Riot was off the hook every single race. Whenever we did it from 2012 to 2013, 2014, before it dissipated, we had every bit of 18 to 30 racers in 4,400.
Wow.
It was the Dirt Riot crew, and they stuck together. So if we went to King of the Hammers, all that whole crew stayed, and we were all tight. We ran the same pits. We ran all of that.
So that's awesome right there.
I see that happening in the future, but they're still getting all their ducks in a row too. So
yeah, I mean, he's only owned it for just over a year.
Right.
So
he's already done everything.
Yeah. I mean, he's done a lot in that year. He's brought in the right people, like bring in Alan Johnson back. Getting JT, which he had JT before he bought Ultra 4 because they had AOE.
Bringing Johnson back was a big deal for social media.
For the social media and the driver side of things, right? The driver interaction, because drivers like feedback. We like to get answers to our questions. And if Alan doesn't know the answer, he will say, I don't know, let me check. And he's making phone calls, and he'll get you an answer within an hour.
Exactly. And it's done over Facebook Messenger, text. Yeah. It's not a big deal. All you got to do is bug him. Or now you don't have to bug him about it. Ask him one time.
Ask him one time, you'll get an answer, and you'll either be happy or unhappy with the response, depending on what you're expecting to hear. But Alan stays on top of his shit. So the smartest thing Jason ever did, and maybe JT had a part in this, was to bring Alan back.
Yep.
As well as getting Pam and Miles. I mean, those two right there, especially Miles. Miles knows every car based off of the headlights or where the number plate is, much less even seeing the number or the color of the car. So having those two on the microphone announcing is huge for Ultra 4, and it's like they never skipped a beat, which is awesome. By the way, Dave did
a killer job
on the microphone. I mean, he knew the trails and the course inside and out. I'm like, and I was listening to it, right? Because I was driving down the road. I wasn't able to watch it and see who was on camera. I was like, damn, that sounds like Dave Colbert.
Then the other funny thing, I don't know if you knew this, me and Miles won a contest put on by Dave Cole in 2011 to be a pit reporter announcer. Is it not working anymore?
It's working now, okay. Yeah.
a pit reporter announcer at KOH. Me and him won the contest.
Really?
And so he continued to do it. I couldn't do it because we started out with our pay being $1,000 to be able to do this. It was just for one day. Cool. No big deal. We went down there. We won we got the $1,000 once we won it.
Right.
And then, excuse me. And then the next year, it was only $500. Then the next year, it kept dwindling. And I said, Dave, I can't go there for free.
Yeah.
But Miles said, I'm going no matter what. And so that's what he did. And that's what put him in that spot.
Wow.
Which I props to him. Awesome. Yeah. He's an awesome. Because me and him both knew every racer back then.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, we knew every racer. Now, I couldn't tell you crap. I couldn't tell you shit about any of the racers.
Especially with as many drivers that change their wraps or get a new car. Like, you can't really keep up with Lauren Healey because a new car he builds every year, it seems like. But, yeah, you know, drivers change their wraps. They don't necessarily change their numbers. But let's be honest, at the end of a day like Rush, you're not going to be able to see a number plate anyway. No. Or you may be able to see the plate, but you're not going to be able to see what color the number plate is or even what color that or what numbers are on that plate. So yep.
That shark fin that Anthony or Cody Sinclair, runs, that is the smartest thing in the world. And I'm surprised no more people do that.
I know. Because Kevin does on his, well, does Kevin run one?
I don't know if he does.
I know he used to run one on the back of the car on the spare tire. I'll have to look and see how it is now, but. Yeah, the one on the spare tire is a shark fin with the squirrel hugging it. That's right.
And you've told the story about the squirrel. Guys, go back to the Nationals podcast back in October. October of last year. He'll tell the story of the squirrel. And I'm almost positive I have it on Instagram also as just a short and probably on YouTube.
It's on TikTok as well. I think I saw it first on TikTok.
One of my TikToks got deleted.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had like...
It's because you put only feet on there.
Yeah. It's her feet. It's okay. But, man, I appreciate hanging out with you. It's been fun.
It's been a blast, man. Thanks for having me.
Are you going to make it out tomorrow for the Crawfish Bowl?
Tomorrow I plan on working on the race car. So before we wrap up, is I didn't race hammers because I decided to tear the car down. I wanted to do some paint, and then I realized when I tore it down, it's like, ooh, I got some problems I need to fix. So addressed those, started putting them back together, went to go put the transmission in and realized the fluid was black. Anybody knows transmissions fluid not supposed to be black.
Is it burnt? Did you
smell it? Yeah, it's burnt. Smoked the third gear and reverse clutches in it. And that was due to a valve body issue from, you know, years ago that Monster said, they said, oh, that was a known problem with that valve body. So you need this new valve body, right? The new one is $1,200. So I did not go with a maximum valve body. I ended up calling my buddy at Fritz Performance and said, sell me. This is what I have. I have a reed case. I need the guts. And he shipped them to Jonas. It's actually sitting at Jonas's house, I think, waiting on the parts, or Jonas is putting it back together. So I'm going to go get it tomorrow, haul ass back to the house, start putting the car back together. Hopefully I can have it back in a roller status by the end of the weekend. Then I could work on, you know, all the interior panels, wiring, plumbing, et cetera. But
you're hoping to be ready for Visions, is what I'm assuming.
We've decided we're not going to do Visions because Kevin's still recovering from his surgery.
Right.
And if we can't race as a team, we're not going to race. So as of right now, it's looking like my first race this year will be the Race to Midnight down at Texana.
Gotcha. Cool. Now, what team are you racing under?
Point One.
So your socials there is Point One Racing on.
Yes. Point everything. One Racing on Facebook, on TikTok. I think it's Point One Off-Road Adventures or Outdoor Adventures. Cause we have to include Heath with his flingy sticks.
Oh, yeah.
What do they call it? Pole vaulting.
He's
a pole vault coach. He started jumping a little bit this past week, but was like, dude, don't do that. You're going to break your leg again. But it's Point One Outdoor Adventures. Look us up on TikTok. We're booming it with like, I think 200 likes. So we're killing it there. I really don't do anything with the TikTok account because we don't have any content to share because we hadn't been at a race since Hammers, and we all know how Hammers went for us. It went horribly wrong. So we're going to regroup, Kevin is still recovering from his surgery. He's probably a month, month and a half away from being able to work on his car. Ian's still recovering kind of from the crash from Crandon, but he's slowly working on his car, trying to do the 72 wide conversion. It's not done. And my car is literally a chassis with fuel cell, radiator, transmission cooler, and engine. That's all it's got in there right now. So once I get the transmission back, I'll be able to slap it in the transfer case, put the axles in. I mean, I can do the axles now, but that just means I have to lift the transmission that much further to get it in the window. So I'm going to leave it sitting on the ground, make it easier to work on. But once I get the transmission bolted back up, then I can start, you know, slap the axles and links and all that in it and then start putting shocks on it. So
cool, cool, man. I appreciate hanging out with you. Thank you so much.
Been a pleasure.
Thanks, Tribe, for giving us this place to actually sit here. And we're actually in a place, and they said there's no quiet place here. And I said, I'm all right. I got condenser mics, and we'll be fine. And it rained on us, and we thought it sounded like a toilet bowl flushing. It
sounded like
in
a
here.
Cow pissing on a flat rock.
That's the exact thing. But we made it happen. And tomorrow we are going to go to the crawfish boil. This is going to come out way later after the crawfish boil. But we're going to go to the crawfish boil, have a good time and enjoy ourselves. I think I've got a couple other ones that I'm going to do tomorrow. So other than that, Shelby, thanks, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you much. Thanks for having me.
Next race is the, Race to Midnight.
Yeah, for me, it'd be Race to Midnight. Next Ultra 4 race is, what is it? Montana, I believe. The Big Sky, I think, is in 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And then, of course, you're going to have Visions coming up in June, which is my wife's birthday. She wasn't happy about us wanting to race that. And then I told her we wasn't. She was happy because we're always at a racetrack for her birthday. So I actually get to take her somewhere this year, which will be nice. But I'll probably be in the shop grinding, getting ready for Race to Midnight. Well, that's just the way it is. So,
well, guys, thank you very much for hanging out with us. We appreciate it. If you liked it, give us a thumbs up or something. I mean, there's comments you can make on Spotify. You can say, you can ask us and tell us what you didn't like about this.
And give it a review as well. You can give a review on Apple Podcasts.
Yep, it's on Apple.
And I think on Spotify, anytime that you can review a podcast, do that. And I don't have a podcast, but I've been a part of a bunch of them. Is it'll help them in the metrics get to the top of the search engines in that particular podcast streaming platform. So go leave him a review. And that reminds me, I need to do it tonight when I get home. So I'll go give you a review on Apple Podcasts tonight.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Shelby St. Clair, and this is Hitch saying, see you on the trail. Peace out.
Peace.